This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
To rescue Antarctica, to rescue Greenland, to rescue the glaciers that I've seen in Nepal, it is absolutely crucial to end the addiction to fossil fuels. Fossil fuels are the first source of climate change.
That was UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on the priorities for the upcoming COP28 conference in Dubai. Details coming up. Also, Israel has extended its truce with Hamas for 2 days. And Sierra Leone's authorities say they have arrested assailants who attacked the military barracks. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Days before the COP28 climate talks begin in Dubai, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres visited frozen but rapidly melting Antarctica. Speaking over the weekend on Antarctica's King George Island, the Secretary General said, intense action must be taken at COP28, where world leaders will address their commitments to lowering emissions of planet-warming gases.
To rescue Antarctica, to rescue Greenland, to rescue the glaciers that I've seen in Nepal, it is absolutely crucial to end the addiction to fossil fuels. Fossil fuels are the first source of climate change. And I hope that the next COP will be able to decide the phase out of fossil fuels with a clear time frame.
Rising air and ocean temperatures are causing the Antarctic ice to melt. The frozen continent plays a key role in regulating Earth's climate because it reflects sunlight away and drives major ocean currents. Guterres notes that for years, scientists and environmentalists have been keeping a close eye on the West Antarctic ice sheet as an important indicator of global warming.
You have already many scientists that say that we are approaching the tipping point in which Greenland will lose its ice mass and West Antarctica would lose its ice mass, which means that we absolutely need to act immediately.
Guterres says COP28 is a chance for nations to decide to phase out of fossil fuels in an adequate time frame in order to prevent the world from rising another 1.5 degrees Celsius. The talks start this Thursday, hosted by the United Arab Emirates, one of the world's biggest oil and gas producers. Chad's opposition is calling for a boycott of the December 17th constitutional referendum, expressing doubt about the military government's sincerity in saying it will hand over power to civilians. The referendum is due to set the stage for elections and a return to civilian rule after military leader Mahamat Idriss Deby took over from his father Idriss Deby Itno, who died while fighting rebels on April 20, 2021. Moke Edwin Kindeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Chad's Transitional Military Council says there is enthusiasm in the Central African state ahead of Saturday's official launch of the campaign period for a constitutional referendum on December 17. Campaigning will run until December 15, according to the National Commission charged with the organization of the constitutional referendum known as CONOREC. CONOREC also says if the electoral calendar is respected, it will announce the provisional results on December 24th, and the Supreme Court will declare the final results on December 28th. Brahim Ben Said is the coordinator of the Network of Civil Society Actors and Human Rights Defenders for Free and Transparent Elections in Chad. He says his group this week also launched sensitization campaigns for civilians in several towns, encouraging citizens be peaceful and to ignore any calls to disrupt or boycott the referendum.
Il a jusqu'à entendre mener cette vaste campagne de sensibilisation en faveur des électeurs.
Brahim says the campaign he is carrying out is to encourage all, if not a majority of the about 8.5 million voters who Konorek says are eligible to cast their votes on December 17. He says the referendum on a new constitution is very important because it will pave the way for the military junta to hand power to civilians, which is vital in bringing back peace and consolidating Chad's national concord and unity.
Dans la consolidation de la démocratie et de l'état de droit.
Brahim spoke to VOA via a messaging app from N'Djamena. There were about 7.3 million voters in the 2021 election that incumbent Idris Deby Itno won. He was killed on April 20, 2021 while fighting rebels. His son, Army General Muhammad Idris Deby, was proclaimed head of an 18-month transitional council by the military to replace him. Chad's opposition says the former president had run Chad as a dictator for 30 years. Opposition and civil society groups say the current leader cannot be trusted because he did not hand power to a civilian government in October 2022 as agreed. He instead extended the transition period by 2 years. Pro-democracy opposition leader Success Masra says Deby should allow opposition leaders and civil society activists who are in exile to return home before the referendum because their votes also count. Masra himself returned to Chad from exile on November 3 under an agreement with the military. Masra has said the agreement with the military included a general amnesty for those accused of organizing protests. A military crackdown on the protests in October 2022 left dozens of people dead. Chad's opposition says scores of civilians, opposition leaders, and civil society activists who are still in jail should be freed before the vote. Aziz Muhammad Saleh is Chad's communication minister and government spokesperson.
Les enjeux sur la réussite du référendum constitutionnel transparent et démocratique ont été rappelés.
He says there should be no fear because Deby has given firm instructions for the constitutional referendum to be transparent and democratic so that peace and constitutional order should return to Chad. He says a successful referendum will reduce tensions, armed conflicts and insecurity that has harmed Chad. Sally says people who fled what they think was reprisal from Chad's government should return home like Masra and not be scared because Deby has granted them amnesty.
Celle relative à l'amélioration des conditions de vie des Chadiens en renforçant la paix et la sécurité.
Voters are to decide on a new draft constitution that the military junta says strengthens judicial independence and institutional reforms. Deby says a vote for the constitution would enable Chad to organize elections for a transition to civilian rule. But the opposition says the proposed new constitution does not bar Deby from running in presidential elections. Amoki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. In Sierra Leone, a leading human rights defender says President Madabayo's speech to the nation appears to have calmed down the situation after gunmen attacked the main military barracks yesterday. Abdul Fatoma is the executive director of the group called Campaign for Human Rights and Development. He reports that the government says investigations are ongoing to arrest all those involved. His remarks come after President Bio announced the arrest of most of the attackers who carried out the assault on the country's military base and prisons. The barracks is close to the presidential lodge and the office of the vice president. For the latest developments and analysis, VOA's Peter Cloti reached Abdul Fatoma in the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown.
This morning, the government put out a statement readjusting the curfew order. Now, curfew start at 6 a.m. and end at 9 p.m. The Minister of Information says that the security will continue to do their operations until they are fully in control. Then they will return life to normalcy back.
Did the president's speech last night, calling on political leaders, religious groups, civil society, to unite as a country against what he called attempt to destabilize the peace, calm nerves in Sierra Leone?
Yes, the president actually emphasizing and stressing the victory by pushing these people out of the city and opening the country back today. He crowned it to all Sierra Leoneans that we have, you know, claimed victory over those who attempt to attack our democracy and, you know, put this country under instability. And then calling on civil society, religious leaders, political leaders to come on board to fight against these enemies that want to bring instability to our country. So that helps to calm down a lot of nerves. And there's a little bit of changes in the tonation of government this time around than the previous protest or alleged coup by them. Because by them, he was saying that they know the people, they will go after them, they will hit them harder, and they know exactly it's coming from a group of politicians. But this time around, he's not blaming a group of political activists or a group of political groups at this moment. He's only calling on the nation and stakeholders to come on board to fight against these people.
Well, there are suggestions. Last year during the protest, the government called it an attempt to overthrow the administration. But this time around, you know, an attack was carried out, the prisoners released. The attack occurred at a military installation where the attackers allegedly took weapons. And the attack basically happened close to the presidential lodge where the vice president's residence was also nearby with other diplomatic missions. Why are they not calling it an attempted coup this time?
That's the confusion among citizens here and analysts and political analysts are international, you know, security experts in Sierra Leone. Because the Amourage was the attack and then ammunitions were taken away and vehicles, military vehicles. And they used those ammunitions also to break the prison and release prisoners, both from the female correctional center and also the male correctional center. And by then, government already has imposed a curfew order, you know, that we should not have people outside moving around. But the released prisoners were out working, you know, peacefully with no interruption. Going to their, you know, different destinations. And then, you know, this very area is very close to the World Bank headquarters in Sierra Leone, the British High Commission, the Vice President Office, as you rightly said, and very close to the Presidential Lodge and that of the U.S. Embassy as well.
That was Abdul Fatoma, Executive Director for the Sierra Leone Group Campaign for Human Rights and Development, speaking with VOA's Peter Cloti. A short time ago, Qatar's government said Israel and Hamas have agreed to extend their truce by 2 days. Had there not been an agreement, the temporary truce would have expired at 7 a.m. tomorrow, threatening a return to intense fighting in a war that has left many thousands dead. Both sides now are finalizing details of an exchange of hostages from Israel, who Hamas holds, and Palestinians held in Israeli prisons. U.S. President Joe Biden, top EU envoy Joseph Borrell, and NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg were among the world leaders who joined a global chorus urging the parties to extend their four-day break in fighting. The ceasefire came into effect Friday after several weeks of indirect negotiations mediated by the United States, Qatar, and Egypt. The conflict began on October 7th when Hamas militants attacked communities in Israel, killing about 1,200 people and taking about 240 hostages. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says more than 12,000 residents have died since the Israeli military began its bombardment and ground offensive in the territory. In addition, Israel blocked flows of food, fuel, and medicines into Gaza. As part of the truce for exchanging hostages and prisoners, Israel agreed to allow hundreds of aid trucks into Gaza, although United Nations aid workers say the increased flow remains far short of what's needed. Earlier today, I spoke with journalist Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem about the situation there.
Well, Hamas has given a list to Israel. Israel has notified the families, which means that Israel believes that the hostage release will go ahead. There are 11 names on the list. We still don't know who. There are still quite a few children missing. Now, the premier of Qatar said that 10 of the children are being held by another group other than Hamas, and it's not clear if they will be able to be freed. There are two little boys. One is 10 months old and one is 4, both redheads who have kind of become the symbol of the hostage children, and their mother is with them. And so there's a lot of hopes that they will be on the list for tonight, but we still don't know.
So far, there's been nearly 50 hostages released and more than 100 Palestinian prisoners freed. What has been the reaction in Israel and Gaza and the West Bank?
Well, in Israel, I mean, you know, these hostages have become like people's families. I mean, there are posters of their faces all over. There was a rally in support of the hostage family Saturday night in Tel Aviv that attracted 100,000 people. So there's a tremendous amount of relief and happiness that especially the children have been released and apparently not harmed while in captivity, although some of them have certainly lost weight. On the Palestinian side, the prisoner issue is a very big issue for Palestinians. And so anybody who's able to release prisoners automatically gets kind of a boost. So the prisoners, the Palestinian prisoners, again, minors and women, some of them were held in administrative detention, meaning they hadn't been charged or tried. Some of the minors were involved in issues like throwing stones and things like that. But a couple of the women apparently were convicted of trying to stab Israeli soldiers but did not succeed. But it's given Hamas a boost in the West Bank, which is where these prisoners were released to. Interestingly, a poll showed that if there was an election today — there hasn't been an election among the Palestinians since 2006, but if there was an election today, Hamas would lose in Gaza but win in the West Bank.
U.S. President Joe Biden, top EU envoy Joseph Borrell, and NATO Secretary General all joined a global chorus urging the parties to extend their four-day break in the fighting. So what has been the reaction there to rising international calls to extend the ceasefire?
Well, Israel has said that it would extend the ceasefire, you know, as long as Hamas continues to release the hostages. And now there's talk of a, you know, two-day extension, which would lead to 20 more hostages being free, as well as 60 more Palestinian prisoners. That said, Israel insists that if it stopped now, it would basically be leaving Hamas in power, and that as soon as the ceasefire expires, whenever that is, Israel is going to launch an incursion into southern Gaza. Until now, all of the fighting has been in northern Gaza, but Israel says that Hamas still has thousands of fighters and hundreds of tunnels running underneath, like the tunnels that we saw exposed in the last couple of weeks. So Israel seems pretty intent on finishing this operation. It says its goal is to make sure that Hamas will never be able to pose a military threat to Israel. That said, there is, as you said, there is growing international pressure. And I think the key is really the United States. I don't think that Israel cares that much about what the EU says or what the United Nations says. But if President Biden is, you know, really turning up the pressure on Israel, it's going to be much harder for Israel to continue. So I'm sure that there are a lot of, you know, behind-the-scenes negotiations trying to convince him of why Israel believes that it needs to continue.
And lastly, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu toured the Gaza Strip on Sunday and vowed, you know, the return of all the hostages. What is the significance of him actually going into Gaza?
Well, it's sort of a sign of showing that he feels safe enough to go into Gaza, that he feels, you know, that Israel controls the area enough. A lot of journalists have been going into Gaza as well with the army to see some of these tunnels that the army has uncovered. That said, there's a lot of flack against Netanyahu. Israelis are very frustrated with how he both has handled the war and even how he allowed the intelligence failure that led to the war to happen. And unlike some of the heads of the army and the security services, Netanyahu has refused to accept responsibility. The polls, by the way, show that if the election were held today, Netanyahu would lose to Benny Gantz, who's a former chief of staff, who's sort of more of a centrist. But a lot of people also say, you know, you don't switch horses in the middle of a war. So at least for now, Netanyahu remains the prime minister, although he's certainly not popular in Israel.
Reporter Linda Granstein in Jerusalem, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
At least 150 people, including women and children, were abducted and one person was killed in an attack by gunmen on four villages in Nigeria's northwest Zamfara state. The Zamfara police spokesperson did not immediately respond to Reuters News' request for comment on the attack, which took place late Friday. A resident told Reuters that dozens of gunmen on motorcycles stormed the villages of Mutunji, Kawanar, Dutsi, Sabongarin, Mahuta, and Ungawor Kawo. A local village head said the gunmen's leader demanded more than $100,000 from the villages as retribution after Nigerian troops killed four of his men earlier. Kidnapping for ransom has become rife in northwestern Nigeria in recent years, where armed gangs have targeted villages, schools, and travelers. If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.